Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descansawan, KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
Listen up, folks, because we've got a great show lined up for you today. First off, Estela De Los Rios is back from Washington, D.C., bringing us the latest update on the immigration bill. We'll be telling you about a key vote coming up on the controversial Castle Rock Master Plan residential community on the boundary of Santee and San Diego this week. And we'll tell you why the city of Santee is considering eminent domain on dozens of properties. Environmental leader Duncan McFetridge will be telling us about a new threat to the Cleveland National Forest. Eric Lund, the new head of the East County Chamber of Commerce, will share his vision for growing our local economy. We'll hear from award-winning historical novelist Roger Conley. Plus, we'll have some great gardening tips for you, and we'll bring you the outcome of the Lemon Grove vote on a resolution calling for overturning the Citizens United decision. We also are privileged to have an interview with Father Michael Bozzi, telling us all about the history of the Chaldean people from Iraq. Plus, Ariel Johansson's Destination East County will tell you all the most fun festivals and activities going on in East County this week. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. Today, our top newsmaker, just back from Washington, D.C., is Estela De Los Rios. Estela is the executive director of CSA San Diego, a nonprofit in East County that addresses civil and human rights for the last 45 years. She's also an advocate for immigrant rights on a national level. Welcome, Estela.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's very good to be here.
Now, I understand you just returned from Washington, D.C. Can you tell us the latest on the immigration bill?
Yes, I had the honor of going to D.C. in the week that immigration was at the core of bringing it into the Senate for the hearing. And when I left, I believe it had just been passed, and now it's getting into the House of Representatives. And that's going to be our challenge in the House of Representatives. Right now, people are organizing for July 9th so that we can call in and encourage our House of Representatives to vote for this passage of the immigration bill.
What are the pros and the cons of the immigration bill as it stands now from your point of view?
The pros of this immigration bill, for many years working on this comprehensive reform, finally, it's going to be a period of 10 years where a family, immediate family only, mother, father, siblings, can have a process where it will lead to a pathway to citizenship. And also, they will be able to reunite with their families. Some of these families have not seen their mothers or fathers or loved ones for many years, 15, 20, 25 years. Imagine not seeing your mom for that many years, but now they can rest and finally travel across to their country and come back and be reassured that they're not going to be living in the shadows anymore. Also, just knowing that you will have a voice in this nation, all the hard work that has taken so many years to accomplish. Those are the pros.
And what are the cons?
The cons are, in order to receive that comprehensive reform, it had to be negotiated with the Republicans. And that renegotiation was border security. Billions of dollars wasted on border security, where that money could be towards education and right now towards health. Our economy is already in a crisis. And adding this is even more of a burden to our economy.
What would you say to those who object to legalization because they believe it could be a drain on the economy?
I believe that it's not a drain on the economy if they do their homework and check into the stats of this country. Millions of immigrants have fed into the Social Security system, for example. Those monies will never be seen by all the immigrants that have contributed in the past years because of their status here. They're unable to file income tax, and all those taxes have gone to our Social Security system. So they're not a drain. In fact, it's an asset, because now we have that. And nationally, an economist has reported that it will make a positive impact if we have an immigration reform.
Back to border security for a moment. What would you say to those who contend that we need stronger border security?
My question would be, how much stronger? In the history of this nation, There has never been the highest deportation rate since Obama's been in office. Us Latinos have advocated that the security has caused a lot of border deaths in these past year, has caused a lot of deportations. Families have been sacrificing their lives, and it's just been as high as it can be. So we believe that border security is not an answer to comprehensive reform.
Could you put a human face on this for us? Some of the clients, perhaps people you've worked with, how is this bill going to impact their lives?
That's a very good question. I believe everyone in our community knows of a family that this is going to impact. We have dreamers that come to us that have master's degrees and have bachelor's degrees, young people that don't even know what Mexico looks like, have never been to Mexico. And in some instances, they don't know any other country besides here where we live now. To understand that they're not welcome in their own place of where they've been educated, where they've gone to school, where they've known family and friends and known the school system. This is sad. I want to quote what Vice President Biden recently said at this Hispanic prayer breakfast that I attended. He said, "These children are not children of immigrants. These children are the children of our nation, and we need to protect them as much as we protect all the children of this nation."
You've met with both leaders in the Democratic and the Republican Party while you were back in Washington. Can you give us any insights into that?
Yes. When I say we, we're about 20,000 leaders in Washington, D.C., doing legislative visits at the Capitol. And this time it was very different and unique. We were able to meet with 222 Republicans in a committee meeting to let them know that Hispanics, Latinos are watching their voice and their support, because Latinos are voting now. The statistics show that 18-year-olds are turning 18 every, I don't know how many seconds, but the majority of them are Latino. So it's very important that they understand that they need to support a comprehensive immigration reform. And we were there to meet with them to let them know what the principles of an immigration reform bill was. Not border security, but a reform that is just and fair and gives comprehensive solution, not just a negotiation.
What are your final thoughts here for listeners today on KNSJ?
While the final outcome of the push for immigration reform remains uncertain, everyone that's committed to justice, equality, and the respect of basic human rights must be clear that there's a lot of work ahead of us. With or without legislation this year, in particular, immigrant communities across the nation will have to find the wisdom, the courage, to address the dual challenges of getting the most benefit of any changes to the immigration law that may be enacted this year, while at the same time, much better organized to right all the wrongs that the current proposed changes will leave unaddressed.
How important is independent media to the Latino community, Estella?
The messaging will change, because right now we are in need of a voice, and that need will be met with independent media, because we will now have voice to that community that we represent and that reflects our demographic changes here in East County.
Thank you so much for joining us today, KNSJ.
And congratulations to you again. Thank you very much.
Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery. I'm here today with Eric Lund, the new general manager of the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce. Eric brings some impressive qualifications to the job. He's the former president and CEO of the San Diego East Visitors Bureau, and he's served as vice president of community relations for the San Diego Tourism Authority. He's also an adjunct faculty member at Grossmont and Southwestern College, teaching business and tourism courses. He's held high-level positions at tourism-related organizations, including Invader Cruises, H&M Landing, San Diego Railroad Museum, and San Diego Harbor Excursion. He's an avid sailor, and he's served as first mate of Windjammer Cruises and as a licensed Coast Guard captain before taking the helm at the East County Chamber. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Miriam.
Eric, what do you consider the Chamber's greatest strengths, and what areas are you hoping to change or improve?
Well, we have a terrific chamber representing San Diego East County. It's been around for over 100 years, and I think that's a strength. But the primary strength of a chamber is really in its membership. We have about 650 members currently, and really that's where the strength lies.
The chamber has had its share of some financial troubles recently, due largely to the economy and some declining membership. Recently, they let their last CEO go. What is your strategy for turning around the chamber finances and charting that course for growth that you've told us about?
Well, again, a strong chamber is really only as strong as its membership. So our first step and highest priority is to build our membership representation back up. But also we have a couple of other areas where, from a financial standpoint, we can be strong. Those two areas include marketing and providing marketing services to our members and the community. And the third being the events that the chamber puts on, which also helps to generate revenue.
Tell us about some of those events.
Well, we have a terrific slate of events each year, including First Friday breakfasts every month, where we have the business community, about 150, 200 businesses come in and enjoy breakfast and basically build relationships with each other. And we also have some educational content with great speakers. We also conduct monthly mixers, and then annually we have some great events like our Women in Leadership program.
I like that one.
Yeah, it's a great. And we just completed a health fair at Grossmont Shopping Center, which was terrific, and that was through the Grossmont Sharp Healthcare District. We also annually have a business fair, which this year we're planning on adding innovation and technology into that mix so that it's going to be quite interesting and we'll have some great educational content.
Very good. And you do a leadership training program also.
We do. Our leadership program goes throughout the entire year. We have a group of people who basically commit one day every month, the whole day, and they go out and actually understand and experience and are educated about different segments of our community, like the legal side or the business community and economics. And after they complete that whole journey, they actually graduate. We just completed our graduating class just last week.
Yes, and you've got an impressive roster of graduates from that, I might add. Given your background in tourism, Eric, do you envision tourism playing a greater role in East County's economy?
Yeah, tourism is obviously our second largest business market in San Diego County. Very important to the East region, of course. We have wide open spaces, a great rural destination. We're kind of San Diego's playground when you really think about it for local residents, but also for visitors who want to enjoy our foothills, our mountains, our desert even. Mm-hmm. And we have now beautiful wineries to visit, wonderful towns and quaint places, history, all kinds of great things to see.
So ecotourism, and as Supervisor Jacob has recently mentioned, agritourism are important components for the future here, you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a perfect fit for the East region. When you look at everything from La Mesa east to the county line and from the border north to Mount Palomar, we have a number of wonderful wineries throughout the region, and there's more adding to the list all the time. We also are the brewery capital of, you know, the world just about. So we have new breweries popping up throughout the region. From an ag culture standpoint, we still have great ranches where you can do ranch tours. We have wonderful bed and breakfast. So we have many opportunities for people to really experience a rural atmosphere and environment.
Do you think that we need balance when it comes to the types of industries we encourage in East County? And is there a risk of destroying the values that tourists and residents value out here if there are too many, for example, large energy projects or development inside Cleveland National Forest, as some have recently proposed?
Yeah, it's critical that we always keep our eye on intelligent planning and that we're considering how we're impacting the rural areas as well as our urban cores. And when you really consider, you know, businesses that move into the area, at the same time, you don't want to restrict business and dampen it and make it difficult for a business to open and to operate in the region. We need to think more like Texas, but at the same time have prudent planning in the mix so that we're being smart about it.
Looking into your crystal ball, what do you see in the future for East County's economy, and what do you believe are the best strategies for economic growth?
I think the future of East County is very bright. We have this wonderful concept called Aerotropolis, which is around Gillespie Field. It's something that we formed a tri-alliance, which includes the tourism industry, the economic development industry, and chambers. And basically what we're trying to do is improve our supply chains with small businesses, matching that up with government and with government contracts so that we're able to stimulate business and really create a much better business environment throughout the region.
And jobs.
And it's going to be centered around Gillespie Field, which is really wonderful because that's right here in our East County.
Very good. Now, the Chamber has some trips abroad planned for its members in the community as well. Can you tell our listeners what some of those excursions are that are coming up and also where people can get more information about Chamber activities?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can get information by going to eastcountychamber.org, and we've got information about all of our travel trips there. But we have wonderful trips. It's a great program, and we plan them out so that they're completely coordinated. All you do is show up with your suitcase, and away you go. And you can get all the information about our travel trips there. Our next trip is really exciting. It's to Costa Rica. It's an educators tour. We have educators from the local region going to Costa Rica and meeting educators there as an example of some of the kinds of trips that we put together. But we also have trips to Ireland, to the South Pacific, to France and Paris, to also to New York City during the holidays.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Eric, thank you very much for joining us today on East County Magazine's Live.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. Enjoyed being here.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The 4th of July festivities may be over, but there are all kinds of activities this week all over East County. And don't forget the local car shows, summer concerts, and movies after dark at the park that are happening all summer long. Listen for details on these recurring events on Destination East County. Descanso Days Back to the Old West on Saturday, July 13th will feature a parade at 10 a.m., followed by live music and a fair all day long. The fair is presented by the Descanso Town Hall Association at the historic Town Hall. Live music will include a steel kettle drum band, Just Friends Bluegrass, Breaking Bad, and Barbed Wire Country Western. Native American dancer Eric Runningpath will also perform. A Kids Fun Zone will feature games, a teepee, and Indian sand painting. A Game On Game Theater, located inside an air-conditioned 55-foot semi-trailer, will have video games, music, laser lights, and more. Vendor booths and opportunity drawings will round out the event. Also this weekend, you can savor English high tea at Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center on Saturday or Sunday, from 2 to 4 p.m. Reservations are required for the teas, which serve appetizers, sandwiches, petite sweets, and an assortment of rich flavored teas. On Saturday night, July 13th, the whole family can enjoy outdoor fun flicks for a free showing of Rise of the Guardians, starting at dusk at Sycamore Canyon Preserve in Lakeside. Viejas also hosts free movies in the park, with showings of The Dark Knight on Thursday, July 11th, and The Hunger Games on Sunday, July 14th, in the park at the Viejas Outlet Center. The Golden State Historic Railway Train runs each Saturday evening at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo in July and August, allowing visitors to ride the rails through East County's rugged scenic backcountry. All summer long, you can also find free concerts on Friday nights in downtown El Cajon, on Sundays at 6 p.m. in La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park, and at Santee's Town Center Community Park every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Santee's next event is a blues and barbecue coming up on July 18th. Classic car aficionados can also check out La Mesa's Back to the 50s every Thursday night in the downtown village, as well as El Cajon's Classic Car Nights each Wednesday evening all summer long. Plus, mark your calendars for July 27th when three big events are happening: Pine Valley Days, the Music in the Mountains Festival, and Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona. More on those coming up soon. KNSJ invites you to the station's launch party August 3rd at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, East County Magazine and KNSJ will be hosting a barbecue and Wild West Fest August 10th at the Descanso Town Hall. Watch for details and reservations on our websites. You can find details on these events and more on our calendar of events and in our festivals section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Send information on your major events to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Have a great week, and we'll see you around East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County, and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org. This is an update on yesterday's story on the Ocotillo wind turbines. After being silenced for more than a month due to a fallen blade, several of the wind turbines are now back in operation, though turning very slowly with winds only 1 mile an hour or so as of yesterday. The manufacturer, Siemens, has determined that the blade failure was caused by insufficient bonding at the base of the blade. 7 blades at the Ocotillo project are being replaced, and Siemens is inspecting and making corrections where needed at similar turbine blades worldwide.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery. I'm here today with Duncan McFetridge, who is one of the most prominent environmental leaders in our region. He's been called an eco-warrior, the guardian of the wilderness. Earth Times referred to him as the marshal against urban sprawl. And he's a resident of Descanso. Duncan is also the director of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation. Duncan, can you tell our listeners about Cleveland National Forest, how large it is, and what it includes here in San Diego County?
Well, it's part of this amazing, what is called the Peninsular Range ecosystem. It is very, very important ecologically here in our county. Right now, technically, there's about 400,000 acres left of the original forest and a little less than 300,000 acres in San Diego County.
And that includes many of our most pristine wilderness areas in our mountain and desert areas.
Yes, it does. It's on the mountain range. It's high up where we have these mountain meadows, very important. But an important thing to note here about the forest is it's fragmented or islandized, making it very, very fragile and subject to incursion by development.
So it's very important to protect what's left. Now, you also authored the Forest Conservation Initiative, which was a landmark measure passed by 2/3 of the voters in San Diego back in 1993. Explain to us what that did.
Well, it was very simple. In recognition of the value of the forest, wilderness habitat, we proposed a very simple planning initiative that said outside the country town is wilderness. Not more, not less. It is wilderness and should be zoned wilderness. So the initiative zoned all lands outside the country towns inside the forest at a minimum of 40 acres. And that was done about 16 years ago, and it's worked perfectly.
Now the San Diego Board of Supervisors, as the provision has sunsetted, has decided that they want to circumvent the will of the voters, to use your words, by proposing a general plan amendment that would allow development within the forest. Can you explain exactly what's happening here?
Well, it's hard to explain why this is happening to something that the people voted in. Its value now, Miriam, has to be even more important than heretofore. The reasons, you know, habitat reasons, resource reasons, the idea of educational reasons for our youth, all these reasons have become much more important because the world is running out of resources, and we all know about climate change. The forest is even more important. The people protected it. Why would the Board of Supervisors? I would have to use some criminal words here. I don't know how to explain it, or a moral lapse, because there can be no other reason. There's no good reason to do this.
Do you believe their actions are illegal?
This gets into the murky world of politics and law and all that. We would say, yes, it is. We're going to challenge this. They actually claim that the initiative expired and went back to the old zoning. We think that is preposterous.
Now, your foundation did a study taking a look at alternatives. The supervisors, by the way, their argument has been that they say we have to accommodate future development. It's got to go someplace, so let's put it out there in the forest. What did your study find?
Well, this is fascinating, Miriam. What we found out is there's more than enough land, zoned land, in the urban area to handle all growth to 2030. So, again, we have a moral lapse here of our leaders not attending to making our cities functional with things like transit and increased density.
Now, this is not the only threat to the forest. Tell us about some of the other things.
On everyone's mind, the governor just wrote an important editorial about, is California on fire? The West is on fire. We have fire danger here that's extraordinary.
We've already lost 98% of the pine trees, for example, in the Cuyamaca State Park, and many within the Cleveland National Forest. We've had hundreds of thousands of acres burned.
And the other really horrendous ecological threat is associated with climate change. There's no doubt we're into a drought period, and we have lost 80% of our mature oaks in our forests. It is a ecological tragedy. It's been written about these diseases. So here's what, just casually talking about this, Miriam, and I want to thank you for bringing up this subject. It's just so important that people know about it. What all this is leading to is the forest has become more fragile.
And then there's large energy projects encroaching on the forest as well.
Thank you. It never ends. The so-called wind energy is another crime in the making. Forgive me for talking this way, folks.
And you're an environmentalist, and yet you are saying that the wind energy is actually not an environmental solution to climate change.
No, look, until you contain growth, make growth sustainable, all resource fueling of that unsustainable growth is a form of robbery. Water, energy, wind, what are we doing? You're going to use wind energy for more sprawl development.
Now, what can people do who are concerned about the supervisor's actions on this proposed general plan amendment that would allow more development in the forest?
Two things. We could either secede from the state of California, or, short of that, I would recommend.
Or the county of San Diego.
Or the county of San Diego. Yeah, something to think about. But listen, contact your local representative. Doesn't matter, city, county, or a group you belong to, a church, a neighborhood organization. This forest belongs to you, folks.
The founder of our national forests and national park systems was President Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican who had some interesting things to say back at the turn of the last century about leadership to protect our wilderness.
Well, thank you, Miriam, for bringing up Theodore Roosevelt. You know, he's considered the world over in every country as the world's greatest conservationist. Theodore Roosevelt, at the turn of the century, saw something immensely important about conservation and natural resources and wilderness. Think about this. He said that conservation was the most important issue facing America, the preservation and conservation of its natural resources. And also, you know, this was not just a little economic debate or some kind of social debate. He considered the loss of wilderness and our resources, upon which our future depends, as a form of robbery. And therefore, he used language that said it was actually a crime. For example, at the time of the robber barons, turn of the century, things were pretty wild, but he referred to the wealthy criminal class in describing the robbery that was going on there.
President Theodore Roosevelt was never a man to mince words, and we have a sound clip to play that he recorded way back in 1901.
The beneficiaries of privilege in the field of industry, the men who represent that sinister alliance between crooked politics and crooked business, which has done more than anything else for the corruption of American life, are united as one man against the genuine rule of the people themselves. The privileged classes, the representatives of special privilege, of special interests, can always make terms with a boss or bosses. They can make terms with the bosses who dominate the Republican Party. They can make terms with the bosses who dominate the Democratic Party. But they can't make terms with the people.
Do you see a parallel to what's happening here today in San Diego's backcountry?
Absolutely, I do. Because, and this is where we have to get clear, language can be used as propaganda, which most politics is, of course. But to suggest that we need to put more homes or develop inside the national forest here is really a form of robbery, and therefore it is. And let me say this very clear. In the words of Theodore Roosevelt, it is a crime against nature. It is a crime against community. It is a form of robbery to our present and future generations.
Where can people go for more information, Duncan?
We have a website, cnff.org. Keep us informed and volunteer.
And you can get information there, too, about upcoming actions or hearings and things on these important issues. Thank you very much, Duncan.
You're welcome.
If you're missing a dog after the July 4th fireworks, the county has nearly 24 dogs waiting for owners at the county's 3 animal shelters. The numbers are expected to go up as animal control officers continue rescuing lost dogs. For details, visit www.countynewscenter.com or call 619-767-2675. You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
My name is Odeh Youssef. You are here listening to the Chaldean Corner, where we give you as much information as we can about the Chaldean community here in East County and across San Diego. Today I'm here with Father Michael Bozzi of the St. Peter Chaldean Catholic Cathedral in El Cajon of East County. Father Michael, thank you for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
You're very well known in our church, of course, and in the community, honored greatly. My first question to you is, who are the Chaldeans and what are they doing in San Diego?
Chaldeans are from the ancient culture of Mesopotamia. And Ur of Chaldea is the cradle of civilization according to the history. Even their name was given to the, today is called Persian Gulf, but it was the Sea of Chaldea. Throughout the history, they are mentioned in the history, half of the Mesopotamia was called Chaldea. Chaldeans are as a nation of 4,000 years before Christ, as a people. But they ruled Mesopotamia and they ruled all over the Middle East from 621 BC all the way to 539 BC. When you open the first page of the Bible, you will see that there are Tigris, Euphrates, and that is the country where the Bible starts to speak about the beginning of the people. And then about Chaldeans, we have in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, God called Abraham to leave his hometown, Ur of Chaldea, and go establish the Jewish nation. These are the Chaldeans, so the cousins. And later, Chaldeans, 539 BC, they were under the control of Persians. And when the Christianity came, spread, Chaldeans were the first to become Catholics, Christian Catholics. And in year 2000, anniversary of 2000 years jubilee, we celebrated a church built 68 AD. It is today in between Baghdad and Babylon. Today, Chaldeans are almost 800,000 in the world.
How many, in numbers-wise, are Chaldeans in San Diego County and East County specifically?
We have 40,000 Chaldeans. But in El Cajon, every four people, one of them is Chaldean. We have 25,000 in El Cajon. Second city will be La Mesa and Spring Valley. And the rest are scattered. You know why? Sometimes the family goes to live around their businesses. So we have 40,000 of them and maybe more now because every week they are running from that persecution. And the rest of the Chaldeans are scattered in other states, especially Detroit. We have 150,000 of them there in Detroit. If you ask why San Diego, because the same weather of our hometown there in Nineveh. Majority of Chaldeans are from the region of Nineveh. You remember Nineveh in the Bible, Jonah and the whale? That's Nineveh. Here in San Diego, 1951 was the first person to come here as a doctor to come and study from Baghdad. And then 1974, I arrived here from Vatican. I was studying there. And there were only 100 family. Then I went to Wisconsin to study. Then I came back. Around 1985, I came here to start. And since then, I am here as a pastor of the community.
Thank you, Father Michael.
You're welcome.
For that information. Father, can you explain the history of the Chaldean language, Aramaic, and the differences in how it spread in its history?
Our language is Aramaic in modern aspect of it. And Aramaic language started from almost 1800 BC in north of Mesopotamia. And today, everybody speak Aramaic. And I wanted to know, when we are proud of it, that every Chaldean either is bilingual or trilingual or more. Why? Because everybody speaks Aramaic at home, and like you do with your family. But English is our main language. We write in it. And those whom they grew up back home, we had to study Arabic. So that means that's why I say the trilingual. And if some of them, they pass through European languages, like I myself, I study in Rome, I have Italian language too. But there are some other people, they went in Greece and they learn a Greek language. So most of the people are either bilingual, trilingual, or more. But Aramaic is the main language for our liturgy in our churches. And the same language of Jesus Christ. I teach it in Cuyama College. Since 1989, I am teaching Aramaic language 2 semesters, in fall and in spring.
One thing that is important in the Chaldean culture was the First Holy Communion for over 100 boys and girls. How important to the Chaldean community is religion?
Chaldeans are all Christian Catholics. Everybody is family oriented. And there are 3 times when they celebrate in their family for their children. Number 1 is the baptism. Number 2 is the first communion. And number 3 is their wedding. And I had last Sunday 187 boys and girls. We, for 9 months, we taught them how to learn their faith, how to practice their faith. And just in parenthesis, I could tell you what happened for those communicants. Many of them, neighbors called me, they stole when they were children, balls or bicycles and all that. Everybody has to return when they go to confession to return it back, otherwise they are in trouble. So being family-oriented, you will find out, for example, they are celebrating that birthday like your cousins. And not only the family, but all the community that come to share together. They're very close to each other.
Father Michael, our culture is definitely diverging with the American culture as we come from Iraq.
It has to. Except one thing. When we came here, we have to be American. And each Chaldean is the best American. And that's my intention to build in everybody to become the best American citizen. Because this country gave us a lot. In the beginning, they have little problems for money-wise to arrange their life. But I have committees, many, many of those committees, to introduce those newcomers to the American way. We take them to the schools. We take them to immigration area. After they settle down after 1 year, and you will find them, they become the best citizen, American citizen in the area here.
And what message would you say to non-Chaldeans who are living as neighbors with Chaldeans?
Yeah, when we came here, everybody thought coming from Iraq, you are Muslim or you are this or that. We are not. Islam came to us in 6th century, entered to Iraq. We were Christian and we stayed Christian in spite of invasion of the Arabs and Islam to Iraq. Today, Christians are persecuted by Muslims in Iraq. I'm sorry to say it. And that's why we have almost every year more than average 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 people coming, running from persecution. Because they killed bishop, they killed 3 priests, they killed many deacons, and they are destroying everybody around them, those terrorists. We love our country. But being American here is the best place for us.
Thank you, Father Michael.
You're very welcome.
Hello, this is Assemblyman Brian Jones. Our state is home to some of our nation's most beautiful parks and beaches, diverse landscapes and plants, gorgeous sunsets and breathtaking sunrises. It is rich because of its rivers, deserts, mountain ranges, and great valleys. I'm proud to represent Eastern San Diego County and Southern Riverside County, home of some of these gorgeous landscapes. Together with East County Magazine, I am pleased to announce that we will be hosting a photography contest featuring your pictures of San Diego's East County and Southern Riverside County. It's an honor to be able to highlight the photographers and the beautiful landscapes these counties have to offer. The winning photographs will be displayed in my Capitol office and featured in East County Magazine. So submit your photos today. For more information, please visit eastcountymagazine.com or call my office at 916-319-2071. All entries must be received by July 15th at 5 p.m. This is Assemblyman Brian Jones.
This is a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. 1 out of every 4 fires is started by arson. When an arsonist sets a fire, everyone pays. Arson fires destroy homes, businesses, communities, wilderness, and lives. They cost our community considerably in fire losses, firefighting expenses, and higher insurance premiums. They also tie up fire crews and equipment needlessly. CAL FIRE asks that the public help by reporting arsonists. A reward of up to $5,000 for each arrest that leads to a conviction is available. If you see an act of arson, try to remember everything you saw. Then contact CAL FIRE or your local fire department.
Next up, Nadine Abbott is here with a local government report.
On June 2nd, the Lemon Grove City Council tabled a vote on a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment to reverse Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission. Supporters of the measure, including Simon Majewski of Common Cause and Pam Page of Money Out of Politics San Diego Chapter, reminded the council that, quote, corporations are not people, unquote. The issue was brought to the council by council member George Castile, who believed that the problems with Citizens United are twofold. Quote, corporations are people, and it does not hold corporations to the same level of scrutiny as citizens, unquote. When the vote came, Castile and council member Raquel Vasquez were ready to vote for it, while council member Jerry Jones and council member Howard Cook said they did not have enough information to vote on it. Mayor Mary Teresa Cesson was torn and saw that both sides of the issue, while she agreed with Castile that it was best to table it for a later date, and perhaps in a later date join San Diego City Council that voted in support of such a measure in December. Majewski spoke with CM after the meeting.
Well, I think it was better that it got tabled than defeated. While there are clearly what seems to be two sides to this council, the fact that we've really been given an opportunity to modify our proposal, hopefully with their help, leads me to believe that we will have a victory on this when it's all over, when all is said and done. So I feel good about what happened. We've learned an awful lot about sort of arguments that people have and the problems that they have with what we're trying to do. We perhaps need to become more clear about what we're trying to do.
On Wednesday night, the Santee City Council will hold a public hearing to consider declaring eminent domain to acquire easements on dozens of properties on nine streets. The city says it needs the properties to widen Prospect Avenue and build bike lanes, sidewalks, and other improvements, as well as placing utility lines underground. But property owners have rejected an offer made by the city. Property owners and their attorneys are expected to testify at Wednesday night's meeting, which will be held at 7 p.m. in the council chambers at 10601 Magnolia Avenue in Santee. The council will also weigh in on whether to assess charges for cutting weeds at properties where owners have failed to remove the weeds. Those costs run thousands of dollars per property in some cases. On a high note, the council will make a special presentation to the Allied Climbers of San Diego in appreciation for the group Scaling Rocks to remove graffiti near Mast Park. Reporting for KNSJ, I'm Mike Hancock.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show, bringing you a special news report for KNSJ. Castle Rock, a controversial housing project that could include up to 430 residential units on 204 acres on the boundary of Santee and San Diego, will be heard by the San Diego Planning Commission this Thursday, July 11th at 9 a.m. The public can attend and testify at the hearing, which will be at Council Chambers, 12th floor of the City Administration Building at 202 C Street in downtown San Diego. The project, proposed by Pardee Homes, has sparked substantial opposition from environmentalists and residents. A 925-page environmental impact report details significant negative impacts on wildlife and the environment. Preserve Wild Santee, on its Facebook page, describes the project as a monstrous housing development in San Diego and Santee, which proposes to destroy four vernal pools and fairy shrimp without examining the cumulative impact of the projects. Coastkeepers, a watchdog environmental group, has objected to the project in a 2012 letter to the city's Development Services Center. Coastkeepers' letter stated, the Castle Rock project should not move forward because San Diego's current water supply cannot support the addition of this project. California Chaparral Institute and Preserve Wild Santee, in a joint letter to the agency in June 2012, cited impacts on several endangered or threatened species and asked why alternatives have not been considered. The group also cited concerns over adverse impacts to a historic trail, Stowe Trail, and accused city officials of ignoring impacts from quadrupling daily tonnage at Sycamore Landfill. In addition, they cite concerns including fire danger, traffic, and increased flood risk, as well as potential discharge of raw sewage into the San Diego River. Pardee's website contends that through its preservation of open space, a mix of residential homes, and proximity to existing recreational areas, the master-planned community of Castle Rock will be the ideal environment for growing families and recreational enthusiasts. The homes would range from 1,700 to 3,800 square feet.
The project is proposed on the north side of Mass Boulevard between Medina Drive and West Hills Parkway near State Route 52 on one of the largest undeveloped parcels left in Santee. This project was first proposed in 2004 but shelved until recently. Santee residents have repeatedly complained about lack of notice from the City of San Diego for proceedings involving the project. Two plans are being considered, including one that would include annexation of a portion of lands. Councilman Rob McNellis of Santee has said back in 2011 that the City of Santee was being given no say-so in the project. The City of San Diego can not only build homes on this land if they get their EIR certified, he said, but keep all of the property tax revenue derived from the project and stick the City of Santee with the cost of public safety, road maintenance, and traffic impacts.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing local author Roger Conley. My guest is a former newspaper reporter and editor and owner of a public relations agency. Roger Conley is also an award-winning author. He's authored 5 historical novels since 2004. Welcome, Roger. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you, Raina.
Tell us a little bit about your latest book.
It's a fact-based World War II novel. It takes two men through the final year of the war, and it describes the war very accurately. We even have real people in the book, President Roosevelt, General Patton, General MacArthur, and so on. And while it is a real tribute to the 1st Marine Division and the 101st Airborne Division and pays homage to the courageous young men that Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation, it also has underpinnings of anti-war. It really does point out that that war is a bad thing. One newspaper review said it's a great tribute to the Marine Corps while still deploring the waste of warfare. Incidentally, 4 of my 5 novels deal with World War II.
What is it about World War II in particular that draws you so much?
It was one of the most defining moments of the last 2 centuries. It changed everything. Before World War II, we had gigantic European empires, the English, the French, the Germans, and so on. World War II ended all of that. It also triggered some tremendous social changes in the world. It gave the impetus to new efforts in human rights, women's rights. It took women out of the kitchens and the bathrooms and put them to work in factories, and it started a whole big movement there. It began the early stages of getting rid of segregation. The armed services were integrated shortly after World War II. Just huge, tremendous social changes. Plus, it was one of the few times in history when 4 brilliant political leaders were all on the world stage at the same time. Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin, and that evil, evil man, Hitler.
What do you find to be the most challenging part of writing this kind of fiction? Is it the facts of history, the research, all those details?
I'm fascinated by all of that, but it's the research that I really love the most. I love getting everything right. I wanted to describe the Battle of the Bulge just the way it happened, and so on. I really love that. Plus, I really enjoy talking with veterans. Mm-hmm. The veterans of World War II are leaving us very rapidly these days, and, right. And the ones I've been able to corner and talk to, it's just been a great thrill for me.
Well, it sounds like really gratifying work, especially for a history buff. One last question. What is your next book about, and when will it come out?
The next book is going to be a post-war book set in 1946 Los Angeles, and it's going to deal with the crime that took place in Los Angeles, organized crime at that time. Bugsy Siegel, Jack Dragna, people like that. And my protagonist, a reporter for the Los Angeles Herald Express, is going on an anti-crime crusade and trying to expose these guys. I'm just in the early stages of this book, and it'll be quite a while before it comes out, probably a year at least.
Well, we look forward to reading it. Roger, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Roger Conley and his work, please visit his website at www.rogerconley.com, and that's 2 E's, and on the Roger Conley Novels Facebook page. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf. ¶¶
of good old Summer Fine. Strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summer time.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Rebecca Lightbaum. I'm here with East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery on KNSJ 89.1, the network for social justice. Miriam, what is the definition of social justice?
Rebecca, that's a great question, and it's all about justice for all people within our society.
But what does that mean in 2013?
Today, social justice includes many things. Here in East County, it could include the rights of rural residents, such as small farmers, or communities with environmental justice issues, for example, people living near big energy projects like the wind farms, where there are health issues not being addressed.
And what else?
Well, of course, social justice includes ethnic and religious minorities, such as our many Native Americans, Latinos, and Iraqi Chaldeans in our region. But it also includes the poor and the homeless. It could include speaking out on issues impacting the elderly or our children. It also includes issues facing working people, as well as issues facing small business owners who are the backbone of our economy right here in East County.
Are there any other voices that would not be included?
On East County Magazine's show, our goal is to include all voices in the community, though we make a special effort to include those voices not being heard elsewhere.
Will the show cover issues beyond social justice?
Yes, it will. In addition to stories on social justice, we'll also include a wide variety of topics, such as the top news each week, features on local musicians. We'll be telling you about the most exciting festivals and events every week, as well as specialty topics such as gardening, our local wine industry, energy and environment issues, restaurant reviews, wildfire alerts, people and organizations doing positive things for our community and our world.
Thanks for that information. We look forward to listening to the new twist on social justice issues right here in East County.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I just came from a client's house where we spent almost all of our time talking about how she needs to change her watering. When I asked her, how often do these sprinklers come on? She said, every day. And I said, oh my goodness. And I said, what's your motivation in having me here today? What is it that you need us to talk about? And she says, I'm spending so much money on water, and it doesn't really pay for itself because I'm not getting the kind of fruit I want, and my plants don't look that great. So I thought this would be a great thing to talk about. Most of us overwater, and in overwatering, that really means we're probably watering much too shallow and much too often. Here, it's hot, and the sun beats down on the soil, and it dries out the soil. And then the roots get dried out, and then the plant suffers. How do we change that? Well, we change it by not watering every day, every other day, every third day. What we want to do is possibly not even change the mechanics of how we're watering. We just want to go to the time clock and change the timing. If you're watering for 5 minutes every day, you would do much better for your plants to water 20 minutes every fourth day, and then possibly even stretch it out from there with a few other tricks I'll tell you. But the main thing to understand is, if you are watering every day for just a few minutes, then what's happening is the roots are only going to grow where the water is, in the top 4 to 5 to 6 inches of soil. And in that depth, there is no resistance built in for when the Santa Anas come, for when it gets to be past the 4th of July and it's 100 degrees in East County or higher. Those poor plants have to depend on where their roots have grown in that surface area of the soil. So what happens when you change that? What happens is that the more water you give, the less frequently, the further down the roots will go. So if you can train your
plant roots by watering correctly, the roots will grow down deeper. They will withstand our heavy, heavy winds and that beating down sun of midsummer, and your plants will be much healthier and much happier. This is especially true of plants that come that are either native here, which you hardly ever water, or the plants that most of us use, the Mediterranean-type plants. These are plants that are used to going a while between waterings. Your citrus trees, people come to me and say their citrus isn't doing very well. It looks kind of funny. I say, how often are you watering? Every other day. Okay, that's the problem. You don't even have to go look to find out what the problem is. What you need to do is water your citrus between maybe once a week. If it's a big old tree and it's been in a long time, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I have a lemon tree on my property that we water religiously in June, July, August, and September, once each month. But when we do water, we water it nice and deep. We water it so that the water goes down at least 2 feet deep. Makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that we're going to do with our watering issue is we're going to mulch everything. But that's something I'll talk about in another one of these episodes.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.